only about 50 to 60% of young black men graduate from high school. A third of all black men in their 30s have a prison record. So how is it, Harvard sociology professor Orlando Patterson asks, that this same community produces some of the most vibrant culture in the world? Are the terrible stats because of outside systematic racism, or is it something inside black culture? Professor Patterson throws that question down like a gauntlet in his new book, co-authored with Ethan Fosse, A Cultural Matrix, Understanding Black Youth. He joins us in the studio. And Professor, there can be two camps in sociology, structuralists who do examine the system and culturalists who focus on culture. You say what?
We're saying it's both. Social scientists and policy people have tended to emphasize the social and economic factors, you know, the poverty, lack of jobs. Conservatives have tended to emphasize the culture, a distorted view of the culture. It's their values. And because of that, liberal sociologists and policy people have not wanted to touch culture. In fact, it's a kind of typhoid Mary. Avoid it as much as you can. And we're saying, look, we can't avoid the cultural, but we're not going to make the mistakes which a conservative make when talking about culture.
Well, let's remind ourselves how we got to the typhoid Mary point. You list the studies. The late 19th century, there was W.E.B. Du Bois. He lived among poor blacks in Philadelphia and sternly admonished them for drunkenness and crime, but also decried the discrimination against them. Leap forward to 1965. Daniel Patrick Moynihan writes The Negro Family, The Case for National Action, for which he was vilified. Yeah. Remind us why.
That's a good question. We should also mention that when Moynihan was writing, there were lots of other studies who were arriving at the same conclusion, many of them by black scholars.
And they were saying things like, when you say conclusions.
Absolutely the same thing, that the problem has to do not only with discrimination, but the large number of kids who are being brought up in single-parent families who lack the resources to bring them up, and therefore there's a problem. But Moynihan, why was he singled out? It's a long story there. First, he was a white person. And let me just say that Moynihan wasn't speaking. Moynihan was in many ways speaking from his own experience. He grew up with a single mom in a low-class Irish area.
But at the time, this, pointing out the number of black families headed by single moms, was seen as victim blaming. In fact, remind us, this is where the phrase came to be.
That's right. It came at the wrong time. The civil rights movement was shifting, moving towards racial pride.
Black power.
Black power. What he predicted turned out to be far worse than what he saw. We now have a situation where over 73% of kids are being born to single parents. And the sociological evidence on this is just irrefutable. That is a crisis.
So bring us to today. What needs to be considered about the culture?
Okay, one of the central points is that there's no such thing as black culture. The black population is remarkable for the heterogeneity of its cultures. And most of those cultures are fine. I mean, middle-class blacks, you know, working-class blacks are among the most God-fearing. They go to church more often than a typical white person.
Talk a little bit about that, because right there, when some people talk about culture, they say they don't have values.
That's an intellectual form of profiling. In fact, it's taking one segment of the population and generalizing it to the whole group. 80% are either middle class or are working class. In fact, often are very conservative in some of their values. I mean, working class black Americans on religious issues and so on are, if anything, somewhat more conservative than the average. However, there is also the street culture. We argue that that is very problematic. Now, people have been talking about a national conversation being necessary. I think that we can't have a real conversation until we bring in one element which has been left out. The inner city communities are terrorized by a small group, no more than 20%, who, however, do have a culture of violence, who do emphasize values such as, you know, I mean, misogyny and so on. So our question is, what is the source of this? And ultimately, the origins of this goes back to America's slavery, American Jim Crow.
How? Make that line. Because some people, and you write about this in the book, take every modern day problem and blame it on slavery. And in fact, maybe there isn't a line.
The argument is very complex. You have to show the way in which adapting to not just slavery, but Jim Crow, in which is a form of institutionalized terrorism, mm-hmm. actually. The remarkable thing is that the great majority of blacks came out of this long system of slavery and terrorism, sane and with sort of, I mean, beautiful cultural productions and way of life. But not everybody did. And from Du Bois' day, he is recognizing a small group, but very important group, which in fact was problematic not so much for the broader society, but for the inner city society itself. Yeah. And this persists. Look, I mean, we cannot neglect the fact that violence is chronic within this group, and it's a huge problem for the rest of the inner city population. You know, the homicide rate is 8 times the white norm, 8 times. 94% of the victims are fellow blacks. Its sources are partly current problems, for example, the toxic nature of the ghetto community, sort of lead paint.
Literally
toxic nature, which has been well demonstrated. The fact that kids, especially boys, are not being brought up. Again, that's a combination of social and cultural factors. Their mothers, they're overworked, they're underpaid, they don't have the time to bring up their kids, especially boys who demand, who require far more attention.
We're talking to Harvard professor Orlando Patterson. His new scholarly book about young black men is The Cultural Matrix. And Professor Patterson, you just talked about black-on-black crime, and you point out there was a point when the inner-city community, ignored by the police, demanded more law enforcement.
Then here we come to the real tragedy here. They want protection. What eventually happened is that it all went wrong in that the police focused on that street culture and generalized that to all black youths. So they started frisking all black youths. Mm-hmm. So instead of protecting them, they ended up being an occupying force.
Well, while we're here, weigh in on Ferguson. Protesters feel vindicated by the Department of Justice report that did reveal the racist policies that they said were there. But on the other hand, the video surfaces of Michael Brown, the victim who was shot, bullying someone in a convenience store. And Heather McDonald wrote on the National Review website that an anonymous black corporate executive told her, Michael Brown may have been shot by a cop, but he was killed by parents and a community that produced a thug.
That's an extreme statement. Yeah. Here's my problem. There is no doubt that we have a serious institutional problem with the police, and that's got to change. But there is also the other side of the problem, which no one wants to talk about right now, which is, why were they there? One way or the other, we have to come to terms with the fact that the inner city is plagued by chronic violence. I'm afraid it's partly cultural, it's partly social. Mm. Cultures can change. Look at the attitude towards gay people. Isn't that amazing? Cultures can change. There should be a conversation within the African-American community as to why do we end up with 73% of kids being born out of wedlock. This cannot be seen as purely structural or economic. Let's look on the bright side. I'd say that of all the majority white societies in the world, America is the least racist. Hmm. I mean, young Americans under 30 are the least racist group of whites in the world.
Well, maybe that's because they are the biggest consumers of the many extraordinary aspects of black popular culture.
The remarkable thing about black youth, which has not been sufficiently addressed, because you have people who work on hip-hop, and then you have the sociologists and the economists who work on the problems. And the two don't talk to each other, but they have to, because you have a real paradox here of how they're so creative.
Well, but you seem to be saying, why on the one hand can they have this success and this terrible failure over here? What do you think the answer is? I mean, what's the...
The answer is partly, it is true that in many cultures, it's the poor who create. Here's a problem. Hip-hop is not responsible for, you know, the misogyny and what have you. But what we do find is that this wonderful creation has been somewhat distorted by one subgenre of gangster rap.
Is the question really, how do you get that same energy and success and translate it into graduations and lower unemployment?
We have a fascinating problem here, because the same group which are being so culturally creative are also dropping out of school at, you know, rates which dooms them to perpetual poverty. The question then is, why can't you have the same energy directed? Some people may ask, does one prevent the other? Is there a preoccupation with sports and with this kind of cultural creation, which sort of demotivates sort of intellectual right. academic activity? I don't know the answer to that one yet. It's a hypothesis worth exploring. But for us, it's the same creativity and the same creative impulse, if only it could be redirected towards other forms of creativity, such as, you know, in school and so on. And that may well be possible, and some people are trying it. That's the kind of cultural work which needs to be done.
Orlando Patterson, professor of sociology at Harvard University. The new book, The Cultural Matrix, a scholarly look at young Black men in America today. Professor Patterson, thank you so much.
My pleasure.